Yesterday's daf, the Gemara brought a statement from Rabbi Yehuda Mishmuel, who said that they were geyser 18 things over there in the Aliyah of Hananiah ben Chizkiyah, and they argued in those 18 things. Aya Brisis says that they were in agreement about these 18 things. Gemara explains that that day that they took the vote, they actually argued, but after that day, Beis Hillel came around and they actually agreed, even in principle, to Beis Shammai afterwards. Gemara again yesterday said that Rav Huna said that there are three places where Shammai and Hillel themselves argued. Only three places where Shammai and Hillel themselves only argued. Gemara brings down the three places. One place is regarding how much of a dough you need in order to be chayiv and chala. That was one place where Shammai and Hillel argued. The next place they argued is regarding how much mayim she'uvim would be needed to pasul a mikveh. And the third place they argued was regarding whether there is retroactive tumah for a woman who sees dam. Do we say there's retroactive tumah there or not? Those are the only three places where we find that Shammai and Hillel argue. Whereas we find that they argue also legabe whether or not you can do smicha on yomtiv, where Hillel says you can and Shammai says that you cannot. Zaktumara, that is a machloikis that was present in earlier generations as well. Hillel and Shammai were not the first, are not unique in this machlokes. There are earlier generations who had the same machlokes. Rav Huna was talking about where there are three places where Shammai and Hillel were the first to have a machlokes, and regarding a certain thing over there, it's limited to the number three. But that machlokes regarding smicha was already a pre-existing machlokes among others as well, and therefore is not included in Rav Huna's list. Marias, we do find another machlokes between Shammai and Hillel regarding whether the mashkin that come out from grapes that were collected to bring to the wine press, whether that liquid is mukshel kamal tuba or not. So we do find a machlokes over there. Mar says that the reason why that's not included is because over there, after Shammai gave his reason over there, Hillel did not answer back. He was quiet, which seems to mean that he ended up agreeing with Shammai, and therefore we do not bring that down as a machlokes. Rav Huna does not bring that down as a machlokes. The Braisa that was brought down in the Gemara yesterday again says as follows: said that Yosi ben Yoeder Ishtrei and Yosi ben Yochanan Ishu Yishalayim, they were geyser on tumah of Chutz La'aretz of Eretz Amim, and they were geyser on glass kalim. Marius, that we find that it was actually the Rabbanim that were alive at 80 years before the Churban. We find they're the ones who were geyser on Tumas Eretz Amim and on Kli Zechuchis. So how can you say it was Yosef ben Yezer and Yosef ben Yochanan when they lived way, way before that? And I was like, but we find that it was the Rabbanim who lived 80 years before the Churban who were geyser on these things. So who was it? Mar says that it was the Rabbi Yosis, the two Yosis, they came along, they were geyser, that a clump of earth from Eretz Amim would make Truma Tomei to the point that it has to be burned, but they were not geyser at all in the airspace. The Rabbanim of Shmoinim Shana is what we're calling them, the Rabbanim who were around 80 years before the Churban, they were geyser, they added to the Xer, and they said that even the airspace of Eretz Amim also gives Truma to the point that Truma would have to be left to rot. It wouldn't be burned out of the airspace, but it would have to be left to rot. Mar says that the gzeira of Tumah of Eretz Amin was not right away. You said that right now that Yoisis were geyser at the clod of earth from Eretz Amin makes Truma Tomei to the point you have to burn it. But from a member of Ilfa, which we brought down earlier, it's mashma that this gzeira was not initially made nor right away to burn Truma. It was sort of a multi-step method. Initially it was made just to allow Truma to rot, and then later on there was another gzera that came along and said that the Truma that was from Eretz Amim would have to be burnt. So how could you say that initially right away the gzera was that it had to be burnt? So rather we can say that the two Yoisis came along and they were geyser that if a Truma touches the clod of earth from Eretz Amim, that Truma would have to be left to rot. It wouldn't have to be burned, it would have to be left to rot. And they were not geyser at all on the airspace of Eretz Amim. The Rabbanim of Shmoinim Shana, they then came along and they were geyser. They added to the gzera by saying that if Truma touches the clod of earth of Eretz Amim, would have to be burned. And then they also were geyser. They took it a step further also at the airspace. If Truma went into the airspace of Eretz Amim, it would have to be left to rot. Marias, we actually find that in Usha is where they were geyser regarding the Eretz Amim. So how could you say that it was done either by the Yoisis or by the Rabbanim of Shmoinim Shana? We find that it was done in Usha. Where it says, we'll say that the Yoisis came along, they were geyser if Truma touches a clod of earth of Eretz Amim, so it has to be left to rot. They were not geyser on the airspace at all. The Rabbanim of Shmoinim Shana came and took it a step further, and they said that they added the airspace to the Xera, that whether it's touched by a clod of earth or whether it goes into the airspace, the Truma would have to be left to rot, but not burnt. Usha then came along and said that if it touches a cloud of earth, it would have to be left to burn. It would have to be burnt, the Truma, but they left the airspace Gzera to that if Truma enters the airspace of Eretz Amim, it would have to be left to rot. It would not be burnt. why were they geyser that kli zechuchis, that glass kelim are could be mekabel tumah? Rish Lakish explained that since it's made from sand, it's similar to earthenware, and therefore they were geyser. They said it has to be tumah like earthenware kelim. If it's treated like an earthenware keli, why could it become tar through going into a mikveh? Which a mission says that a glass keli could become tar in a mikveh. Earthenware kelim do not become tar from a mikveh. That mission is talking about where the glass keli got a hole in it, so it really lost its tumah because it's no longer a keli. You fill in that hole with metal. And the mission that follows Reb Meir, who says that you follow what's really making it a keli right now. Since metal is what's making it a useful keli right now, it gets a din of a metal keli, and that's why it was allowed to be put into the mikveh. If glass is treated like an earthenware keli, then it should not become tummy if it gets touched on the outside of the keli, just like an earthenware keli does not become tummy if it gets touched on the outside with a dove tummy. Or it says, since if glass can be broken down and remade into a new keli, it's more like metal in that way, we treat it like metal. Just like metal keli can become tummy when it's touched on the outside with a dove tummy, we treat glass in that same way.